A Wednesday Lenten Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 12, 1997, entitled Soldiers at Play, The Human Shadow Side. The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 42, verses 1 through 4, Jeremiah 7, verses 1 through 7, and Luke 19, verse 45, through chapter 20, verse 8. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Just a glimpse. That's all we ever get of Jesus. Just a glimpse. That is a phrase that is a section heading in a book by Robert Funk entitled Honest to Jesus. In the 1960s, there was a book by a British bishop called Honest to God, and it shook the theological and ecclesiastical world. It was a radical statement, a call to a new vision and understanding. Robert Funk intends Honest to Jesus to be a similar kind of book. And he is one of those scholars who his whole life has been doing research into the Gospels to try to discern that elusive figure of Jesus that lies behind those gospel accounts. We only have the four gospels. There are a few other references here and there to the fact of Jesus' life and his death. But basically, we have those four documents, but we know now that those four documents are already highly interpretive portraits of Jesus. They were written anywhere from 4 to 7 decades after the events. They were written to specific communities in concrete situations, quite removed from the context of Jesus' own ministry. They had their own purpose and their own context that they were addressing. So we have those four documents, and they are interpretations, faith, affirmations about this one, but this one remains that elusive figure behind. And the amazing thing is that here, 2,000 years later, that quest for the historical Jesus has never been stronger. It's really a fascinating phenomenon. We'll come to Holy Week here in another 10 days. I wonder if Jesus will make the covers of Time and Newsweek again. Very possibly. One of the things that the historical research on the historical Jesus has done is that it has leapfrogged over the academic establishment. It has leapfrogged over the ecclesiastical establishment, and it's gotten to the people. And the people are fascinating. It's rather interesting, isn't it, that the same thing was true in Jesus' own day. The people were spellbound, Luke tells us, as Jesus taught that last week in the temple precincts. And the authorities were at a loss to know how to handle this situation because of the popularity of this rabbi from Galilee. And all we can get is just a glimpse, now and again, of this shadowy figure who dwelled in an alien time and place. Even for those who wrote the stories that we do have, and certainly an alien time and place from our own life and our context, far removed from anything that we know. And yet, it seems as though the quest only intensifies, even if we can get only a glimpse of this shadowy and elusive one who comes to us as one unknown. Another irony to me is the contrast between the real Jesus as we catch a glimpse and the domesticated Jesus of the church. It is a serious question if we would be at ease with Jesus. Jesus in the church has been domesticated and conformed to our cultural context, our religious sensitivities and expectations. The irony is that Jesus was unacceptable to the religious community of his day. He was rejected and he was crucified by the Romans, but at the instigation of the leaders of his own people. It was the temple establishment, Luke is quite clear, the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders. The chief priests had their position by hereditary succession. The scribes were the educated ones who held the expertise in that society, and the elders were kind of like Christ's community, the upper class, socially and economically. It was the established social order that confronted Jesus. And again, the irony is that we, the established social order today, have taken him in and domesticated him and made him our own. Now, have we caught a glimpse of the real Jesus in so doing? Sometimes we're told that the best way to enter into a Bible story is to put yourself into the respective characters, to identify with the characters. As I grew up in the church, I always identified myself with the good guys. And I think the ministers that preached and that taught me must have led me to do that. There was just an assumed identification of us with him. Then it's a rather shocking realization, isn't it? That we, in this story, far more would have to identify with the leadership of that society, that temple crowd. That's really who we are. And so when he came to Jerusalem, they confronted him, and the issue was authority. By what authority do you do this? Well, they were responsible to do this. It was their job, after all. because they were the responsible leaders of their society and of their religious community. And he had come into Jerusalem with his followers, being proclaimed a king. He had forecast the destruction of Jerusalem and the fall of the temple. He had come to the temple and cast out the merchants, cleansing the temple. He disrupted the normal everyday operation of what was going on in the very center of the religious life of this people. Shouldn't they have called an elders meeting? The board of trustees of necessity should have met. This was their responsibility. And they came to him and said, "By what authority do you do this?" These weren't bad people. These were good people, just like us. How much would we tolerate if some vagabond came to town with a ragtag crowd and set up a tent and came in here on a Sunday morning and disrupted worship? It wasn't a simple matter. Sometimes we just think, well, if we had been there, we would have seen, obviously, we would have heard his word, heard his voice. We would have been on Jesus' side. My little granddaughter says sometimes, "I don't think so. I don't think so." Every once in a while we catch a glimpse of Jesus. And if we're honest, he is a destabilizing force and a disturbing presence. Now, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but at Sunday dinner, Nancy said, "I don't like Jesus." Now, I want to be clear that she loves Jesus. But I talked about Jesus and his mother Sunday morning. And being a classic mother, she did feel some of that tension of Jesus over against his mother. I mean, what kind of a son says, "Woman"? Huh? Well, that's just a little humorous incident, but it does point out the fact, folks, that Jesus was prickly. Jesus stood in the line of the prophets. And I didn't read the passage from Isaiah 56, but that's where his statement, "You've made this," or "this house is to be a house of prayer for all people." I did read 42, that beautiful portrait of the suffering servant, this one who doesn't quench the flickering wick or crush out the, doesn't break the one that's bent and broken. He's compassionate, he's tender, but he's also tough. And in that other passage in Isaiah, God is speaking about the inclusion of those who were too easily excluded. And at the end of that chapter, he talks about the shepherds of Israel. The dogs have a mighty appetite. They never have enough. The shepherds also have no understanding. They've turned to their own way for their own gain. The leadership, the prophets were tough on the established leadership. In Isaiah or Jeremiah 7, the temple sermon, "Don't say the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord are we. Don't trot out the credentials of this place. Don't tell me all about its glorious history and all the pastors who have served, and amend your ways, Jeremiah says. Be concerned about justice. Be concerned about the poor and the hungry. Clean up your life. Then you can dwell in this temple. And Jesus picks up that phrase, you've made it a den of robbers, when he goes into the temple. Jesus is in that line of the prophets who were always trying to break through to that religious establishment that always dozes off and gets comfortable and gets a vested interest in keeping things the way they are and becomes in the process an hindrance and a block to the inbreaking of God's newness. Jesus was tough and tender. He was compassionate, and he had no patience with a kind of religious structure that used people and abused people and was not sensitive to the poor and the widow and the fatherless and the excluded ones. So once in a while you catch a glimpse of Jesus, just a glimpse, and then I get into a conflicted situation myself. I sit at my desk and I think, the poor pilgrims come here on Wednesday night out of a rushed week, hardly having time for supper, wondering whether they should come or just stretch out and kick their shoes off, looking for some inspiration and some comfort. And what do you give them? A tough Jesus. Talk about being abused. I think about the Jesus of the church. Who is the Jesus of the church? Saccharine, sweet, sentimental. Nietzsche criticized the church for inviting human weakness, and the church has been criticized as a gathering of those who are weak and can't stand on their own and stand up. But I think sometimes in the church we've actually cultivated that kind of dependency. Gentle Jesus, meek and mild. But on the other hand, he didn't crack the bruised weed. He didn't snuff out the smoldering wick. He was tender. So, what are you looking for tonight? Why did you come? This Jesus, how serious are we about really wanting a glimpse that sees through to the real one who was the incarnation of the eternal God? It's a strange thing. 2,000 years later, the search and the quest is more intense than it's ever been. And given modern historical consciousness, we will continue to probe and to search, to struggle. We will. But who is that Jesus? And how serious are we in this Lenten season? Will we use him as a crutch? To cater to our weaknesses and our fears? Or will we fiercely follow this prophetic figure who is engaged in human transformation and the humanization of society? Robert Funk gives me the phrase, a glimpse, just a glimpse. And he has a paragraph which I hope will speak to you. Because if we do catch a glimpse and something of the life and blood Jesus breaks through to us, then this may be our experience too. Funk writes, the Jesus of that alienating world encourages me to celebrate life, to suck the marrow out of existence, to explore and probe and experiment, to venture into uncharted seas without fear of a tyrannical or vindictive God. He does not set limits on my curiosity, on my drive to challenge every axiom. That same Jesus prompts me to give myself to tasks that exceed, even contradict, my own self-interest. I am not infrequently startled at the tasks I find myself willing to undertake because of the glimpse of that Jesus. And there is something bracing about that, isn't there? That provocative presence, that disturbing presence, that destabilizing one who will not let us sleep, will not let us settle down, will comfort us, will embrace us, will salve our wounds, but will call us then, once again, to get on the way with the work of the inbreaking of the kingdom of God. He's tender and he's tough. And he believes in you, and he calls you to follow.